So, Paul, tell me about the charity.
Well, we started about a year and a half ago, and it was one of those moments where you have a conversation with a neighbour and you've both heard the news and you're both thinking, we ought to do something here. And you're thinking, first of all, there's the personal aspect of we ought to help, we ought to find some refugees and help and so on. And then you're thinking slightly wider than that. So I was sat on a webinar with 8,000 other people run by Sanctuary Foundation, just a few. And you know, it was at the time when we were finding out that there was going to be a visa help office at Calais and one at Lille, and actually they never existed. So we're all a little bit hot under the collar about it. And they do a survey because the government have just said, the first part of the scheme is going to be for people who know Ukrainians. How many people know Ukrainians? Mm. And it's like 3% on the out of the 8,000. So immediately everyone is sort of thinking, right, how are we going to do something? Because we want to do something. And, you know, Brits, you know, work their way around any obstacles that get put in there. And so people started talking about matching sites and things like that. So next up, we have a conversation with the vicar. And I'm a consultant in my past. And so I sit down, I do a process map. From my point of view, if it was me, what would I want? And so we ended up creating this sort of organisation that would provide everything from finding hosts, checking them out, finding Ukrainians to match them with, helping them with visas, helping prepare the hosts with all the things that they need to get ready. And then when they arrive, there's this frenzy of 2 or 3 weeks of registration, we can take more, you know, doctors, dentists. Don't even try on that when we have emergency dentists that we can go to, but schools, benefits, you know, the whole list of things, and with the things that the government provide, or some of the things that may lag, so they get welcome payments, but you know, and the hosts get thank you payments, but they can get paid in arrears or delayed or things like that. So it's making sure that we were caring for both. Not only the Ukrainians coming over and making sure that everything was okay, but also the hosts and the problems that might come up. So we then roll on to, right, they've got here, they've got the kind of essential things they need. We start running clothing boutiques, which my friend Alex has, you know, she gave up her dining room to store all the clothes, and once a month we would go down to the Sawmill cafe and we would have, you know, typical coffee, cake and the clothes. And so we started doing English lessons as well, because that is the key enabler. You know, without knowing how to speak the language, yes, there's brilliant tools, your Google Translate and your Say Hi, but they can become a crutch. So you need, if you want to get a job, you need to be able to communicate. So we started up the English lessons, and so gradually that started taking on more and more effort, money and so on, and therefore fundraising that goes with that, helping them find jobs, helping them with the extra things that they might need, like bikes or laptops, things like that. So move on a few months, and we, or a few weeks in fact, because we were changing our name by the week almost, because we went from supporting a village to 3 villages to 5 villages to fronting, being the main organisation for Congleton, and then networking with organisations like Refugees Welcome, obviously building really good relationships with Cheshire East, who've been great. So, you know, we now we've helped over 240 Ukrainians. It's probably over 100 families. And we cover mainly Cheshire East, centred on Congleton, but we also have hosting families and people we support in Staffordshire, Cheshire West, and so on. So, you know, one of our super hosts is hosting 10 people. So, yeah, you can imagine. And so that's become an awful lot of work, but it's now evolved into a sort of second stage. And the second stage really consists of 3 things. So it is still English lessons. And there's an ebb and flow to that, because you have initially people they want to work and they'll say, I will do whatever is available. And then when they're they're doing that. You actually have got a very well-educated bunch of people. So you've got pharmacists, you've got accountants, you've got project managers, you've got IT people, you've got food technologists, you've got cake makers. And if they get a job, we had up to 15 working at Siemens at one stage, then they say, well, actually, I'm an accountant. I want to do accountancy because that's how I can earn my money, or I want to be a pharmacist. Well, you've got to have a particular English lesson, that's an English exam qualification, to be able to be a pharmacist. Even a lorry driver. So we've got two lorry drivers who could drive across Europe when they were based in Ukraine, come to the UK, can't do that. You've got to pass an English exam and your HGV test again. Yeah. So that starts directing the sort of coaching that we do. So English lessons, job support. And then they started wanting, having been with their hosts for maybe a year, or less, there was a definite feeling that they wanted to get their own independence, move into their own properties from a renting point of view and so on. And so if you imagine you've been living with a host and then you go and find, whether it's social housing or renting yourself or whatever, but you've got nothing and it's an empty house. You might have an oven, but that whole support from white goods, sofas, beds, bedding, curtains, all the kitchen appliances, all the kitchen small appliances, toasters and so on, is something that on an individual basis for a small potato peeler or something like that, you may go, well, that's very cheap. When you look at it in the round, that's an awful lot of stuff to do. And quite frequently, we have people who are going, right, you're moving in, you've got this move date, you might have this particular date from the council that you can move into this house. You've been allowed to see it once beforehand, so you've got to take all your measurements really quick. It's got to be painted, it's got to be carpeted, and then we're going to move it. So it's, you start on taking on the management, the project management of that with the hosts, because for a host to do all the stuff they've done would be an absolute nightmare, or really tough to do it all on your own. Do it in a group where you can call on different people to help. So whether it's the likes of Rotary have helped me out doing a house move at one weekend, they just came mob-handed, moved it, and this was to a family in Leek. So you're then helping them do that. With my two who are in the process of moving out, one's an IT developer, the other's a classical sax player, a student, and she's got a four-year scholarship at RNCM. Royal College of Music, and so she's moving out, they're moving out to Levensium. But you don't just become the moving man and the furniture collection man, you're also the maintenance man. So for the leaks of the washing machine and all those things. But and you're trying to give this sense of, if you have a problem as any family, then we are here to help, whether it's for the hosts, for the family, and we try not to limit it, and we try not to say no. I think there has been an element of the word has started getting out. So you get help requests from Leek, a family in Newcastle-under-Lyme where the oven they'd been given had one ring working on it. So you replace the oven. You hear stories of, like, there's a family in Stoke, grandfather, two sons, both married, each with a 9-year-old, living in a 2-bedroom house in a really slummy area. Really tough area with drugs and stuff like that, and the council say they're not overcrowded, and their boiler breaks, and you hear stuff like that and your heart goes up. So what can you do to help? And I think, while our kind of mental deadline for how long does this carry on is, once all our people in our core group are in jobs and rehoused and settled, then at that point we'll start to wind it down. At least that's what I've promised the wife. I guess the one other thing I would say is that, the fuel that keeps you going is the community. It's the brilliant people who donate, whether it's just, beds or an oven or a washing machine, just, or host people who host or look after people or volunteer, or, all those people who help out. You're seeing the best of people. And that's the brilliant. I'm smiling all the time, mostly for myself. So I think that's been the thing that's kept us all going, because that's what you enjoy, and the happy faces at the end of it. On my birthday, word got out and I had three or four chocolate cakes and bottles of wine. And, you know, and it's just like people appearing at the door at 10 o'clock at night with candles lit, singing happy birthday in their best Ukrainian, you know. And so it's a brilliant thing. And it shows the local community at their best.
Funding is one of the key things.
Yeah.
Getting money in so that you can do all the things that you do. Mm. I take it you do fundraising events and things like that. Is there a way that people can donate?
Yes. On our website, so our organisation is called Congleton Area Ukraine Support Network, which is abbreviated to CAUSN, and just add a .com, and you'll be there. So there are two useful things on that that I draw people's attention to. One is there's a donate button on that page, on the homepage. There's also details of fundraising events we do. And also there's a list of the furniture that we're looking for from a donation point of view, because that is a very cost-efficient operation because everyone is just so generous and so helpful.
I mean, that's great, isn't it? Because if you haven't got money, because, I mean, we're talking cost of living, aren't we? If you've got something that you can donate, then you can still help, can't you?
Absolutely. It's, you know, whether I've picked up stuff from all areas, you know, and you have brilliant chats about why they feel moved to give. I've had one where you drive to the organiser at the end of the street and then you see there are furniture piles all the way along the street as the community has put stuff out for it. I've done two van loads, you know, in one street. And that was just brilliant. You know, for one, the next fundraising event we're doing is it's a little bit not what I would normally expect an organisation like us to do, but it's a champagne tasting, which is organised by one of my friends who set up a charity to import champagne, and it's not for profit, so all the money goes. There's a markup for the charity, and he supports Macmillan. He's now supporting us. So it's good champagne from a place that he knows in France. But again, it's all, everything goes to the charity that's nominated for the tasting and whoever buys stuff afterwards. We've done things like concerts at Clonter. Clonter have been fabulous in terms of supporting us. Particularly with Ty, who's lived with us, the classical sax player, performed there. We had a concert pianist, an opera singer, all Ukrainian. We have an event we're supporting with Refugees Welcome in Macclesfield on the 18th of November, which is a sort of music and crafts of all the refugees that they support. Mm. People coming along and showing and selling different things that they do, or just coming and performing. So Tara is performing there as well. So, you know, there's a range of stuff that we do. We have had marvellous cake stalls throughout the summer where all of our Ukrainian community will cook wonderful, wonderful cakes. And it just all goes. You just see it. You're just sitting there trying to resist buying any of it or eating any of it. As with anyone, you want to do, with any organisation, you want to try and do all the things that enable them. For us, the ultimate goal is that the family integrates and is happy. Then they have the choice when the war ends or when it's safe enough to go back. And some definitely want to go back. Some would like to stay. Mm. I mean, and you're bound to have that range. So many still have their family back there. Many have cousins fighting, or two have got three cousins fighting. You know, you have people who've lost their complete house, relatives, loved ones, you know. So one family, the husband's been repaired, great, all the windows were broken, and he was in the front line where they invaded. And so he's been progressively repairing the house. Obviously, he's looking after his dog there as well. We still get people wanting us to find them hosts. That still happens. But they tend to be now, one, it's much, much harder to find hosts. So if there is anyone still out there who wants the host, please let us know. But it tends to be, can you help my parents come over? Can you help my relative come over, or my friends come over, or who need help, or, you know, people who need treatment, or, you know, it, but it tends to be the close friendship group or the relative group. So, and we see what we can do there. And obviously, if it's a single person or someone needing a single bedroom, that's far easier than someone who needs three, four bedroom house.
Absolutely. And final question, if anyone wants to help, regardless of, you know, in the sense of collecting furniture or doing something for fundraising, you must be looking for more people.
I will bite their hands off and worship them forever. there are ways to contact me on all different sorts of forms on the website. So that can be offers of help. That can be if you want to host, all those different things that I've talked about are all there. And as soon as this interview is finished, I'll certainly be making sure that my furniture list is up to date. Because the key trick with that is the storage area. And you're constantly trying to make sure that you don't, you manage that effectively so that you can deliver what people want.